Hello, welcome to this week's Pinken.com Norwich City podcast, episode number 330. I'm David Freezer, and to my left I have got our deputy head of sport, Mark Armstrong, and to my right, the father of all things Pinken, Mr. Peter Raven. Thanks for joining me, chaps. Pretty eventful game to look back on. Pete, you were in the thick of it, a 4-3 defeat to West Brom. Did you manage to keep track of everything?
Yeah, it was... We wanted more entertainment, and we certainly got it. 4-3 thriller. You never felt that it was going to go the same way as like the Liverpool game, the 5-4. West Brom seemed to be that step ahead, but it just seemed like every shot went in. It's just certainly a game of mistakes rather than exceptional football, but... entertaining nonetheless, that's what we want. Just need to sort out the back now.
Yeah, if you look at it from a neutral point of view, it was entertaining. I tweeted during the game, who's going to take on the Adam Drury role and score the make it 4-4, which of course would have been the first 4-4 since Middlesbrough in what, 2005. So that would have been pretty epic. And Jordan Rose did come close from right at the end when Grant Hanley headed the ball back across. O'Neill Hernandez, the man that we're all talking about, second week in a row, Mark.
Yeah, I've heard a couple of people now mention that he's kind of the new Darren Huckabee is sort of the word on the street. You can kind of see where they're coming from with that. Mm. He's direct sort of winger, and he's really affecting the game, first couple of games of the season so far. But, I mean, other players have got to sort of step up to his level, haven't they, now, really? And I think with Farker, he's just all about trying to find that balance, isn't he, still? He can't find that balance between defence and attack, and that's where his problems lie at the moment, and he's still struggling to find a solution to it.
OK, well, before we get really stuck into the events of this one, try and actually make sense of it, we will touch on the Stevenage game, which, of course, is Tuesday night, first round of the Carabao Cup, first competitive ever meeting of the two teams. So a new one for Carrow Road tomorrow night. We'll touch on that a little bit later. And then, of course, we'll look ahead to the Sheffield United game. Just a quick mention, if you ever want to get in contact with us, our email address is thepinken@archon.co.uk, or you know where to find us. On social, on Twitter, Facebook, all that luck. So do get in touch if you've got any questions or comments about the Canaries. So Pete, yeah, let's do this. Let's try and remember everything that actually happened. First off, Leitner puts through Rhodes, should score, bad touch. Then Hernandez wins the penalty, and Hernandez sets up Rhodes, 1-0 from there. West Brom equalised from the penalty spot, Jay Rodriguez, and then the big moment of that first half, Jordan Rhodes' penalty rolled to his right, and from what Sam Johnston has said since, he knew exactly where Rhodes was going to put it.
What, through research or just at the time?
He said he'd researched it from last season when he was on loan at Villa, and I presume they were playing Sheffield Wednesday.
Any stamp people.
Any goalkeeper worth their salt, I guess that's what they have to do. Going back to Hernandez, two goals in the first game, and then what would have been four assists in the next one had that gone in. It's keeper goes the other way, it's a good penalty, but it's soft, isn't it? And it's, you expect better from a striker of his quality. You can't really blame nerves because he didn't already got off the mark, so his confidence would have been up. But it's, you go 2-1 up, it's half time.
Yeah.
And you think, yeah, I think it'll be one team win it, but it then gets West Brom up again, doesn't it? So I guess he'll still take penalties, but probably put them in the corner now.
I just think we're seeing sort of how damaged maybe Jordan Rhodes is at the moment, and that there still is a player that I know and you're right, Pete, that his confidence should be up after scoring, but I'm not sure it is, because he's had two seasons where he's barely played, or he's not been the main man, which he wants to be. But you can see from what he's done so far that there's still a striker in there. There's not many better strikers at this level that's sniffing out a chance. Mm. It's just about taking that at the moment. And if one of Farker's big jobs, as it is with a number of other City players, is rehabilitating that ability that he's got and producing it consistently. I mean, that's basically Norwich's raison d'etre at the moment, isn't it? To rehabilitate these players that have maybe lost their way a little bit. If he can do that, then Norwich are going to be right up there. If he can't, then they're going to bumble along in the Championship.
I mean, that should have been a hat-trick, and they deserved to be in front at half-time, really. It was a very good performance, Daniel said afterwards, that possibly the best 45 minutes from his team since he's been in charge. So, I mean, there was enough there for me to be positive still about Rhodes, because you've got the movement. I'd still rather have him there than Nelson Oliveira, because he's actually leading the line. And I was pleased to see the striker picking up the ball and wanting the penalty. I can't I can't remember what game it was last year, but there was a game when Jerome let Maddison, I think it was, take a penalty. And I just thought, what self-respecting striker lets a midfielder take a penalty ahead of him and when he badly needed a goal? So I'm pleased to see that. And you'd have him taking the next penalty if it comes along?
I would. I guess, unless Barker's rule of if you win it, you don't take it, it's time and place. You've got to, really, haven't you? Because if you then take it away from him, what's that going to do to a player who's low on confidence anyway? Yeah. You just stay with it. I mean, Wes was always our designated penalty taker. Whenever he ran up, he always felt a bit nervy. Mm. But no, you keep the same player.
And as some people have pointed out since, Wes didn't score all his penalties, did he?
No, he didn't score most of them.
But
I think, yeah, you keep it with Rhodes for now, don't you?
Yeah, you just got to, like Mark says, you've got to build the guy's confidence. But
he'll want to take the next one as well. He's that sort of player. He's an absolute poacher, isn't he? These sort of strikers see a penalty as an easy way to boost their goals for a column, don't they?
Yeah, you'd like to think so. So from there, Tim Krul takes centre stage early in the second half. Alex Tetty takes the blame initially for being robbed in midfield. Jay Rodriguez shoots from 30 yards. Krul just somehow spanners it into his net and they're 2-1 down. And they were just shell-shocked, weren't they? The third one goes in as well. You know, admittedly, a good finish from Harvey Barnes. Great work from Matt Phillips to keep the ball in. Well, this is debatable, isn't it? Yeah, I see there's quite a few people debating whether Dwight Gale was in an active position or not. It's, you know, for me, quite possibly it's debatable, but at the end of the day, Rhodes missed a penalty, Tetty's shot himself in the foot, and Krul spilled one in the net. So if all those things don't happen, that is irrelevant. But then the 3-1 up, and at that point...
You worry then, don't you?
Yeah, did you really see it sort of falling apart?
Yeah, there was people starting to leave at 3-1.
Yeah, there were.
Barkley they're leaving the Gerald fairly early anyway. So, you just thought 3-1, a team that's come down, they hope they want to get a big win early. You think 4 or 5, they could really crumble. Mm. But to their credit, they stuck at it.
They did. And Pukki gets the next one. So, I mean, Hernandez, his work led to the opening goal. He won the penalty. Then he crosses wins the ball and crosses for Pukki to make it 3-2. West Brom get 4-2, I think I'm keeping count there, ahead, and it's a corner. Alex Tetty loses Hegazi. Hegazi heads it down. Pinto doesn't follow. Robson Kanu, just more errors all in here, isn't it? And then he fires. It's 4-2. And then there's that man again, Ono Hernandez, beats his man on the right. Another great cross. And Hanley, what a header that was. But O'Neill is absolutely flying. But at that point, it felt like Norwich were going to get back into it, didn't it, Mark?
Yeah, I mean, you'd hope so, wouldn't you? I mean, it's pleasing. And I think that sort of bringing him in, it was in January, wasn't it, that he was brought in. I think that sort of first half of the season has helped bring him on. And he's obviously seen what the league's all about now. And he looks really settled now. I'm just glad that you'd hope that Norwich won't sell him, because he will be on the radar of other clubs now, you just hope that Norwich can get if he can continue this form, get a good season out of him, because you know he can take him anywhere they want to at the moment, because he's in that much form.
It's a shame that Rose just couldn't find that extra half a foot to get on the end of Hanley's one at the end, because I think the roof quite literally would have blown off Carrow Road. I mean, what an epic game that would have been. But yeah, O'Neill, 2 goals, 2 assists already this season. If he continues at that rate, there's no doubt people are going to be interested in him, because he's, 25 off the top of my head, and he was a Germany under-19 international, I think it is, again, off the top of my head. So top-flight clubs are going to make note of that. And Mark did mention it earlier, that the Huckabee comparison, you know, maybe we'll all be a little bit careful of that, but do you see that as a fair comparison, Pete?
That's a lot of pressure on your own shoulders this early on. But yeah, in his style of play, we've not had anyone like that since Huckabee that's been that direct down the wing. Mm. And when he gets the ball, people are off their seats. You think something's going to happen, and invariably it does. You just like to think that... I know he owes a lot to Farker, doesn't he, for coming over here. You'd hope that would... there'd be some sort of loyalty there if they do come sniffing around, and the club have not had a bad summer, have they, in getting money in, so you'd hope we'd keep him for at least a season if he continues like this. But yeah, he started on fire, so
I mean, this is just the way it is now for Norwich. Yeah. If they don't go up, then they know that they probably, and O'Neill does have the season that we're hoping he does have, and then they probably will lose him, but they'll make a significant profit on is it
1.7, I think,
1.7 million, you know, 5 times that over if he has a really, really good season, and even more. So, and that's just where Norwich are at. But you know, hopefully they can actually use him to get in the top six and get up. That'd be the even better scenario.
That sounds good to me. I mean, some criticism for Daniel. I mean, that he perhaps didn't make the changes sooner. You know, Louis Thompson came on late. Shrebeni came on with what, 15 minutes to go. Again, showed a few bright touches, but I think Daniel probably just deserves that little bit of leeway at the moment, doesn't he? Because of when you think about that, Krull, Hanley, Tetti, Pinto, Lewis all did miss pre-season in the end, despite there being no major injuries. Vrančić as well, you can chuck in there. With all these little bright sparks, once you've got that team fully fit, if they can find 90-minute performances like they did in that first half, they're going to be some force to contend with.
You've also got to remember that team on Saturday, there wasn't a lot of championship experience in there. It's if last year was a different team, this year is completely different again, so you've got to give him that benefit of the doubt in that case. But it's okay, so it's 1 point from six. I know it's early on, but he needs to pick up some wins soon because the crowd will turn.
Yeah,
there's only so much time you can give someone a new side.
I was going to say that's the slight worry. So if you got a couple more games where they pick up a draw and another defeat, then the pressure's really going to start to crank up. And at the start of the season, people say, oh, he's got 10 games. We have even shorter than that before. People will start getting a little bit annoyed with how things are going.
Yeah.
I think they're ready to go. But, you know, it might completely go the other way. Let's hope it does. You know, we've seen enough so far to see that there are some positive signs that, you know, they are good going forward. And if they can get that defensive steel that they found at points last season, but as I mentioned at the start, he's got to find that balance, otherwise they are going to be in trouble.
And the fixtures coming up are not easy either. No. Sheffield United away Saturday. I mean, I know Daniel steered them to a 1-0 win there last year, but of course, very different team. Madison there, Gunn.
Yannick
scored the goal, yeah. Angus Gunn was fantastic that day. So, and on the back of that, Preston at home on the Wednesday and Leeds on the Saturday. So, you know, Leeds have started the season like a train. I look forward to them coming off the rails, and I very much hope that it's Norwich that starts the process. But it is a tough little run there. And immediately there are people coming out of the woodwork who are still frustrated with Farke's first season, and they're not willing to be patient anymore. And I mean, somebody said to me it's about time that he's gone, to be honest. And so I find that bizarre. How you can't, he deserves at least a dozen games, you know, to really show what he can do, you know. And they would have to really lose a lot of those games for him, his job, to be even being in, under consideration, I would have thought. I mean, do you think that people are just being totally unfair there?
Yeah, and I think you're right, and it's a hangover from last season. I don't know what people are expecting us to do. And again, this season, the players that we've lost and those that have come in, no one's going to expect us to run away in the league or even probably be top six, but you've got to give him a chance. You don't have to say after a couple of games, yeah, because of last season. I mean, last season's gone.
Yeah.
You know, everyone starts on 0 points.
It's a different squad. Just look at it. It is a different squad, isn't it?
Yeah. And it's, you've got to be impressed with what you've seen, especially on Saturday. The players that have been brought in and the way they played on Saturday, there's going to be one or two. If we play like that against certain teams, we're just going to tear them apart. So, and as much as O'Neill's impressed, I thought Pookie was really good on Saturday. So his link-up play, and again, he's someone that no one had even heard of. He's been brought in. So
60 caps for Finland, but I agree, I hadn't heard of him.
Yeah. So these players he's bringing in, everyone goes, who? And then, they've done well so far.
Okay.
So, anyone saying you should go now is mad.
Yeah, it's far too early, and let's hope that we don't have to go down that road.
Also, the club is heavily invested in Farke as well. Now you can look at the squad. I mean, it would take a monumental downturn, I think, for them to even consider his position at the moment, quite rightly. But because you look at the players he's got, and you know, you can see Farke's hand on a lot of them, can't you? And if Farke went, then you'd start to worry about them as well.
I do have to question the fact he's wearing a coat on Saturday, though.
He must have been warm. I mean, I didn't wear a coat all day, but fair play to him. Okay, so the news after the game, confirmed on Sunday, Remy Matthews has now gone. Bolton, which seems a good move for him. He'll be competing with Ben Amos, is it?
Anik.
Is it Ben Anik? I'll have to double check that one. you're right, it is Ben Anik, isn't it? Yeah, because he played against Norwich. So he's got a fight on his hands to actually get into their team. But this shows that all that stuff on Thursday last week, the transfer deadline, sort of, part one. For those of you that joined us all day on the pinken.com deadline day blog, where absolutely nothing happened, but we had a nice chit chat. Thanks for coming along for the ride. We'll do it all again on the final day of the month when it will mean something. But this shows, as with other deals subsequently, that it didn't matter because you can just loan someone with the agreement that the actual permanent deal will be signed in January. I mean, what's interesting with that is, you know, what if Remy Matthews does his cruciate ligament? I mean, I know it's all in touch with that doesn't happen for the guy, of course, but just as an example, Bolton have then committed to a deal that they're going to have to pay for in January. but anyway, that's by the by. Remy's gone. From talking to Daniel at the press conference ahead of the Stevenage game today, he is going to stick with Krull, McGovern and Oxborough. Unless, as he put it, Stuart Webber can bring in Manuel Neuer or Jordan Pickford before the end of transfer. Transfer winner, probably unlikely. So it looks like they'll be the three to go. I'm surprised to see Remy get a move to a Championship club. Were you thinking that League One might be beckoning again, Mark?
No, not really. I'm not surprised because he did very well at Plymouth, didn't he?
He did, by
all accounts last season. I'd heard a couple of things that Norwich were looking to loan him out to someone who of a higher sort of status. So obviously was looking at the Championship. What surprised me the most was that it was a permanent deal, but I can kind of understand that as well, really. I mean, you know, if you're Remy Matthews, you're 24, you've just seen them bring in Tim Krull, who's got a 2-year contract. If it's fairly likely then that Krull, despite his error on Saturday, is going to be the first choice for the next couple of seasons. Matthews is then going to be 26 and hardly played any first team games for Norwich, so it is time for him to move on, I think, as much as that will pain some Norwich fans to see, obviously a homegrown lad, Goulston. But if the lad wants to do anything in the game, then I think he's got to move on, and he has. I think it's probably a deal that suits everyone. I mean, what's interesting as well is what would happen now. It's been widely touted that McGovern is someone that they've been quite keen to get rid of. Apparently he's on decent money, nothing to quantify that really, but apparently he's one of the ones that is on a decent contract at Norwich. What happens now if someone comes in for him? Is he now part of the furniture? Is he now part of the City squad for this season because he's only got 1 year left?
Yeah, he's in the final year of his contract. Yeah, I spoke to Daniel about that, and on Remy, he said it was a difficult decision because clearly the club has, you know, talked a lot about wanting to develop academy players, so this isn't kind of the route they want to go down. But he said the time wasn't right for him to be number one, so they wish him well. But with McGovern, he was really strong on it in about how Michael is a really good professional, very well liked in the dressing room, very reliable. I think off the top of my head, he said that McGovern is capable of world class performances, and I mean, you know, we saw how well McGovern has performed on the international stage, so high praise for him. He said he was first into training, last out of training, and if Michael McGovern has to play every game the rest of the season, he and the rest of the players are absolutely fine with that. So he's either really bigging him up in the hope of shifting him before the end of August, or they're happy to go with those three. So are you satisfied with that three as a goalkeeping unit for the rest of the season?
You want that experience on the bench, don't you? Because some people thought, well, why isn't Remy number two? He obviously got his chance in pre-season, and for one reason or another, it's not worked out for him in those few games. Not surprised he might go on loan. Interesting to see it's a permanent deal, but like Mark says, he's 24 now. Angus Gunn is, what, 22? He's already had a full season under his belt. He left Man City for similar reasons. He wanted to play first team football, and now he's on the bench at Southampton. So you can't blame him or the club. It's just hope that Krull stays fit, really.
Yeah, the one thing that annoys me about the McGovern situation is that he is taking up one of those non-homegrown roles, which are so costly for Farker at the moment. So, you know, you've got to have these seven in your quota. But if your goalkeeper, who isn't going to, you know, potentially, if it goes like Angus did last year and Krull plays all the games this year, apart from against Stevenage, because Daniel has confirmed that Michael McGovern will be starting that one and Krull will get a rest, having had such a limited pre-season, then that means the whole season you've got a number two goalkeeper taking up one of those valuable spots. And if there becomes if a situation arises where Daniel can't name the bench or the starting 11 because of those restrictions and you've got Michael on there, then at some point you're probably going to have to just think, I'm sticking Aston Oxford on there instead.
I was going to say, I think that's probably what he would do, isn't it? And you'd hope, you'd have to be pretty unlucky to throw Oxford to be in the first team, wouldn't you? As it stands, I mean, you'd have to have quite a set of circumstances for that to happen. I mean, the interesting one for me is what and when Tim Krull signed, I was a little bit concerned as well. Is that, yes, he's been a very good goalkeeper. Is he still a really good goalkeeper? Mm. I mean, we've only seen two games of him. And obviously made a mistake on Saturday. You can't judge him too harshly. But if he's not what he was, then McGovern's going to have to be the first choice.
Well, he did clumsily give away a penalty as well, I suppose. I mean, I think Ben Marshall, he just couldn't reach it, basically. I mean, Daniel...
He did.
He
didn't really have much choice.
No, it was clumsy, but yeah, he didn't. I suppose he was just trying to keep the ball out of the net, so he did sort of do that to an extent, gave himself a second chance, didn't he? But yeah. I think we're all confident that as long as Tim Krull gets game time, then he's gonna improve, isn't he? And we did get a question on Twitter from Gary Field about the situation. Remy Matthews, a premature decision to loan/sell or long overdue, considering he's now 24. I think it's just common sense, really, isn't it? At this point, if he's not going to play for the club, then they've got to be fair to the lad. What's funny really is that it feels like we've been in this situation so many times before with Declan Rudd, Jed Steer, Joe Lewis. You know, Norwich have got a heck of a record of producing goalkeepers, haven't they?
But this must be similar to a lot of clubs. It's one position they're fighting for, as opposed to outfield players that can play two or three. They're all going to have it, but yeah, we do seem to rattle off some decent keepers that never do at Norwich. Or we get rid of them, then get back on loan. it's competition is fierce, but I still think it's the best move for both club and player.
Yeah.
He's not going to get in here, and so wish him all the best. But like you said, yeah, the weird thing is it's McGovern instead and taking up that place on the bench. But then that's Farker's own making of who he wants in the transfer window. I'm sure he's fully aware of the rules when he goes out and buys players. So if he's got to name two or three kids on the bench, then that's his own fault.
Okay. To Tuesday night then, Stevenage, League Two side, as I say, the clubs have never met competitively before. First round of the Carabao Cup. Norwich have actually reached the fourth round in five of the last six seasons. They're actually doing okay in a cup competition, and they haven't lost.
Proper cup team, Norwich, aren't they?
Proper Carabao Cup team, yeah. And the last home game they lost in the competition was the quarterfinal to Villa back in 2012.
Paul Lambert's Villa.
2012-13, yes, that's the one, under Chris Hughton. A game, that was Christian Benteke, wasn't it, when he took Norwich apart with a hat trick, I think. Yeah, he was unplayable that night. But so yeah, Norwich have done well. Of course, got to Arsenal last year. The year before that, it was Leeds on penalties in the fourth round. But Stevenage, on the other hand, who you know a little bit about, don't you, Mark? From former guys. They've never got beyond the second round. Although they did beat Ipswich 1-0 in the first round at Portman Road 2 years ago, so they've got to be a little bit wary. Do you know much about Stevenage still? Because it was a few years ago, wasn't
it? I've got to confess, not a great deal. I know a bit about their manager now, Dino Marmaria. He was assistant to Graham Wesley when I was reporting on them, and you know, he was sort of a larger than life character, quite a nice guy. They'll play quite direct football, as I think you sort of know from what Daniel said this afternoon at the press conference. They've got sort of big forwards, all over 6'3", I think they said. So they'll be quite direct, and that'll be something that Norwich have got to contend with, which they've not always done so. Particularly if, I think it's going to be a big game for Zimmerman, because he'll clearly come in. But it doesn't sound like Hanley.
Like Hanley will probably rest it. I think Tim Closer will probably fine to play. I mean, the guy looks in tip-top shape to me. I've never seen him look as slim and sharp, really. I mean, of course, he had the ankle injury back end of his first season with Norwich in the Prem, didn't he? Which he was then Then when he dropped down to the championship, he was struggling a bit. It took him a while to get to speed. Then he missed a large chunk of pre-season and the start of the season last year. This time he's got a full pre-season. I think he's looking really sharp, although of course they lost their way a bit. But yeah, Zimmermann, I suppose Godfrey could potentially be tried out there in a game like that. But like Daniel said, that they play three up front, the smallest of which is 6'3". I think he's talking about Alex Ravel, who scored two late goals for them when they won 3-1 at Crawley on Saturday. And he's, I think he's 35. He's really done the rounds. He's been, he had a spell at Cardiff. He was at Cambridge when he was younger, Northampton. He's been at several football league clubs, and he's a wily old dog. So, yeah, he's one that Zimmermann will really need to impose himself on, you would have thought. Just to rattle through the team news issues, Emi Buendia won't be able to make his debut. He's back in Spain because his wife is just about to give birth to, that's due to happen today, Monday, as we're recording. So Daniel's basically given him permission to miss the game, and then he'll come back in during the week. Jamal Lewis won't be able to start the game. He's not ready for 90 minutes. He, of course, got a dead leg last week, which held up his recovery from missing pre-season. He did get a little bit of a kick, apparently, in training. Whether that's James Husband trying to force his way back in, I don't know. But but Daniel says he's fine. So it sounds like Jamal might be on the bench, but that will be a late call. The only other one that he was sort of probably committing to was that Michael McGovern would start, basically because Tim Krul is big enough and experienced enough to shake off the mistake on Saturday. He doesn't feel that he needs to sort of chuck him straight back into action. He's not like an 18-year-old keeper who really needs to sort of get over that. So Daniel feels he can make more changes than he did in the Cup last year. He thinks he's got more squad depth. He thinks he's got some exciting players. I think potentially we'll see Max Aarons, Felix Paslak tomorrow night. And in one way or another, whether they both start, I'm not sure. And also the other thing he just pointed to is that he's wary of injury. For the ones he named were Krul, Pinto, Hanley, Tetti, and he mentioned Vrančić, but as an example really as well, that those guys who miss pre-season, they've got to manage the load. He's all about the load, isn't he, Daniel? So I mean you see that as a safe enough approach, Peter? It just doesn't matter too much with the league.
No, I mean, and Tetti never does Saturday, Tuesday, does he?
Makes sense, doesn't it?
His tribal wasn't even in the squad on Saturday.
Wasn't, no, just so, just for tactical reasons, Daniel.
Yeah, so he might start. So Benny, be nice to him, get some proper minutes. And you play to your position, really, don't you? So yeah, he knows he can make those changes, and there'll be too much for Stevenage. I've ruined it now.
Touch
so
wood.
Why not make the changes? Like he says, it's, you don't want to get one or two serious injuries early on. So yeah, happy to see several players come in, those that haven't played before, and it's all about getting minutes now.
Yeah,
I'd quite like to see him play. I don't think he will. I think you're right. I think it'll be Sabeni, but I'd quite like to see him play Rhodes again, just to him to hopefully get another goal, get that confidence in him. Because he's just a player that will thrive off that momentum, isn't he? But I think that by the same token, Sabeni probably does need the minutes as well.
We did miss the last game and a half of pre-season Rhodes, so maybe that will bring him into that same bracket as the others as well, perhaps. But maybe you'd still have him on the bench, you'd have thought, in case you need him. But Sabeni, I mean, he's looked bright in his last two sub appearances, so he probably deserves that start. I mean, if you're not playing Hernandez and you haven't got Buendia, the wide options are an interesting one, really.
There's a lot of pace, is there, if you take
I think we may see Felix Paslak in a more advanced role. I wonder whether well, the imponderable is James Husband, because Daniel was quite strong on him after the West Brom game, really, wasn't he? Saying that it was just that he'd played badly the week before, so he wasn't picked. So whether that's a precursor to him actually leaving or not, we'll probably get an idea to tomorrow night. Because if Max Aarons or Marco Stiefelman starts at left back ahead of him, then I think we can say goodbye to James Husband pretty soon, as long as they can shift him. Equally, I suppose Ben Marshall, he's had a full pre-season, so he should be fine to continue, as I said, with Closer, Tribal to come in. I think Leitner's probably going to be happy for more minutes, isn't he? So
Thompson, he'll come in, do you think?
Thompson, I think that's a good shout, yeah. Or maybe
they've been quite surprised by him, haven't they? They've
been very impressed.
Yeah.
It's just the wide options that I'm a little bit unsure about. I think you're probably going to need to play McLean as a wide option. You may even need to start Pookie. So there's not loads, but they don't have to worry about the homegrown thing. That's one good thing for the the cup games. That's out of the window. Don't have to worry about that until Saturday. No extra time this year as well. That's been killed off in the League Cup to reduce the minutes that are put into that during the midweek. So that seems a sensible one. And they've got rid of ABBA. not the band, but the penalty shootout format, which did it happen at Chelsea in the end in the FA Cup? It didn't, did it?
I don't think it did.
No.
Because there was all that, everyone said afterwards, well, hang on, we're supposed to be doing a new way of, and they said no, so
it was just chaotic that night, wasn't it?
I'm guessing we won't see Nelson either.
No, I think we can be pretty certain we won't see Nelson Oliveira in a Norwich shirt again, unless he... no one picks him up before the end of August. Even then, I'd be sceptical. Okay, so just finally, let's look at Sheffield United on Saturday. Difficult game in Bramall Lane, always a tough place to go. They drew with Preston at the weekend, didn't they? Billy Sharp still popping up with goals. This was Coach Gate last year, wasn't it? The coach driver. And Mr. Wilder getting on his high horse. So is this one that you'd quite like to see Norwich win again?
Yeah, just for those reasons. if we get a draw, then it's a tough place to go, isn't it?
I'd take a draw. So sat here today, if you can get a draw and then get at least 4 points from... Didn't see actually for Sheffield United. Yeah, it was a nice goal actually. That nice team move. I mean, then it's Preston, of course, who come to Norwich on Wednesday. So that would be a great first win for the season, wouldn't it? Beat Alex Neil. That would be a feather in the cap for Daniel Farke. But could you see Norwich win at Bramall Lane, or is it one they need to go a bit more negatively towards?
I think Farke will do that. I think he'll adopt the template that he had last season at Bramall Lane. Why wouldn't you, really? I know you want to see it entertain the football, but he needs to get a result, and I think he'll rein it in at Bramall Lane, just as he did last year, and sort of not park the bus, but play a bit more defensively minded, and hopefully pinch a goal as they did last year.
Lovely stuff. Right, thanks chats, thanks for joining me. Let's wrap it there. Of course, pinkman.com is the place to be for all of this week's fun and games. You can follow the game live with us at pinkman.com/live on Tuesday night and Saturday, of course, at Bramall Lane. All the team news ahead of the Stevenage game is up there as well. Nice line from Daniel on Emi Buendia saying hopefully another young man with the talent of his dad coming into the world. So nice smile on Daniel's face. But from those who follow Emmy on Instagram, his wife has looked very heavily pregnant ever since he's signed for Norwich. So I'd imagine she's probably quite looking forward to being over by now. But fingers crossed that all goes well and we get to see Emmy in a Norwich shirt soon. Right, we'll catch you again soon. Cheers.